have a fellow UW system colleague here, and we hope to have more connections with Milwaukee and some of the other UW system schools as well. Professor Mikosz is the author of over 13 books and over 70 articles on Polish language, literature, and cartography, and he won the Penn Club Prize in for his six-volume history and anthology of Polish literature in English, making him very well placed to discuss the role of Polish literature and translation into English. For the last 30 years, he's directed UW Milwaukee's Study Abroad program at the John Paul II Catholic University in Lublin, Poland. And in 2008, that same university awarded Professor Mikosz the Order of Merit. So we are very honored to have such a distinguished colleague and scholar here with us today, and I hope you'll join me in welcoming Professor Mikosz.
Thank you very much for this introduction and for the invitation to Krika and my colleagues here, Alina Filipowicz, Ewa Miernowska. I'm delighted and honored to be here. And when I received the invitation 1 year ago, I thought I have a good opening statement. I am not so sure anymore, but I'll go with it anyway. I'm honored because 75 years ago, it was a year ago when it was 75 years ago, a special Polish program was established at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. This was the first program in Polish established by the special act of the state legislature, in this case, Wisconsin legislature. And immediately, three great scholars arrived from Poland to establish the studies, and then it turned into the Department of Slavic Languages. These scholars were Jerzy Kuryłowicz from the Lwów University, today Lviv University, the most outstanding Polish historical linguist who developed the laryngeal theory of Indo-European languages, supporting the Saussure studies. Also, he worked on the case theory and on transformational syntax, which later became important in the theory of linguistics. The next scholar was Professor Witold Roszewski, also an outstanding linguist and lexicographer and dialectologist, and he came here and worked for a year or so. And the third one was Józef Birkenmeier, who was a poet, writer, and translator. He was a translator of English literature into Polish. He translated Daniel Defoe, Kipling, Stevenson, the classical works of English literature. These three men set the base and foundation of the department, and then they were joined by numerous scholars. I'll need help with the movement here, but I'll talk about that.
It's just delayed.
Here they are. Okay, thank you. Then came Edmund Zawadzki, a local scholar, American scholar, Ksenia Gąsiorowska, Zbigniew Olejewski, Lawrence Thomas, and Halina Filipowicz in 1982, as well as many distinguished scholars in other Slavic languages and literatures. That's why being here and talking about Polish literature is a great honor and pleasure. What I'm going to talk about today is about English translations from Polish literature into English against the background of Slavic studies in the United States and Canada. And it's obvious that familiarity with Polish literature and by extension with Poland has been limited historically by the existence of adequate translations. So I based my talk on the bibliography, which I compiled, 71 pages, of all the translations from Polish literature into English in the United States and Canada. And then, encouraged by the results, I went into England and Poland as well, from the beginnings, from the 16th century to the present. So this is a bibliography of texts which are essential, of course, for students and general public to learn about Poland and Polish culture. There are no scholarly monographs about Polish literature or articles. That's a different topic, and I didn't deal with it at all. The results are on the screen here. There are about 777 books and 101 anthologies. And if you look at literary genres, you can see that mainly it's prose translations, 494 books, 256 dealing with poetry, and 87 drama. And again, in these translations, I didn't look in general on translations published in monographs or periodicals. That would have to be a separate book which would qualify in that category. Now, if you look at literary periods from which these books come, you'll notice that 415, which means 50%, come from contemporary literature. And for the purpose of this talk, I defined contemporary literature from 1950 to 2010, and the remaining almost 50% from other periods. And these numbers don't add absolutely, because there are anthologies, sometimes books belong to various periods. But you can see that if 450% come from contemporary literature, the remaining come from this period, 146 from the Dwudziestolecie Międzywojenne, between the war period and World War II, then going back to realism and young Poland, Romanticism, Enlightenment, Baroque, Renaissance, and Middle Ages. You'll notice immediately that the farther back in time, fewer translations are provided of Polish literature and Polish culture, with the exception of Renaissance, and that's due to mostly to Jan Kochanowski and his great works in poetry. When we go to historic presence in England and then in America, we look, I also designed or used three arbitrary periods when these translations were published. And you'll notice immediately that from 1560 to 1900, only 69 books were published from Polish literature into English. So then from 1901 to 1945, 137, and then again from 1950 to 2010, 76% of all the translations. So that was coming gradually, these translations. And we come now to the beginnings of Polish books which were published in English, translated and published. The first one is Marcin Kromer, a notable example of God's vengeance upon murdering a king. And this is original spelling. It appeared in 1560 and was followed by Goszlicki, the Counselor, 1598. And they were the books of Polish Renaissance historiography about the role of the Republic, about the art of governing, role of a Senate, and a model statesman. The Counselor is a story of what a statesman in the Republic, his functions and his role should be. And these were very important works because they played a role in the development of political theory, and they were used in England, translated into English. Goszlicki was translated many times, and they were confiscated in the Elizabethan England because the question of the role of the king was very sensitive. But they are quoted in political pamphlets, and it is assumed that they were known to Shakespeare. And many critics, not many, but two or three, who studied this topic suggest that Polonius was an ideal statesman or mockery of an ideal statesman. And we know that Jefferson had Goszlicki's work on the Counselor in his library. These beginnings were followed by Maciej Sarbiewski, and that he was the most prominent Latin poet of the 17th century, known as the Sarmatian Horace. And his odes, epodes, and epigrams had 30 editions and they in the 17th century, and were particularly well known and used and quoted in the poetic circles in England. And here you have the names of people, of poets who were influenced by Sarbievsky. And what's to prove his longevity and importance, in 2008, his English translations, Casimir Britannicus, were published in London. So there is a new edition from 2008 of Sarbievsky's work. In 1828, the first anthology of Polish literature appeared in London, and the author was John Bowring. He was an MP, he was a consul in China, governor of Hong Kong, and most important, his task was to bring in foreign literature into the English language. So he produced a number of anthologies from foreign languages, and he was assisted by Christian Lach Schirmer, professor of Warsaw University, who was also a colonel in the November Uprising and translator of Mickiewicz. And he also translated, I should mention here, Ewa Felińska, who was the first woman writer translated into English. And she is a very interesting person, and I would like to think that somebody will write and translate her works, because she was a conspirator after the November Uprising. She was widowed, she had six children, and she was exiled to Siberia. And she described her experiences, and it was translated by her fellow insurrectionist, Christian Lach Schirmer, and published in English in the 1850s. And another name, which also should be very important, is Michał Czajkowski. He was of Ukrainian and Polish background. He was involved in the Polish insurrectionist movement. He was a friend of Adam Mickiewicz. He went to Turkey and changed his name to Sadık Pasha. And he wrote about, and his goal was to bring freedom to Poland and Ukraine. So he had a double task of establishing those two countries as independent countries. The anthology included texts of Kochanowski, Szymanowicz, Sarbievsky, Krasicki, Niemcewicz, and two books by Niemcewicz were published, and a Jewish tale, or a love story actually, and a story of his captivity in Russia. Niemcewicz was Kościuszko's aide. He was imprisoned in St. Petersburg, and he described his experiences of that period. Six translations of Mickiewicz appeared in that period, but in spite of his publications and articles about him, his poetry did not find response among English critics and readers in that period. And in 1836, Maria by Malczewski, another story or epic poem of the Ukrainian theme, was published in that period. In 1875, first translation in the United States appeared, Krasinski's Undivine Comedy. It was published in Philadelphia, and it's the first play to show the looming class conflict and revolutionary movements. Krasinski was 21 years old at the time. He was an aristocrat by birth, but he was aware of what's happening, and the book was written in 1835, and he was already talking about the looming danger and the war, class war, which erupted not much later. And there are also in the United States now historical novels of Krasiewski, published in New York, and two of them dealing with Jewish themes, because of that period in Poland, the Jewish theme and issues were very popular and described in numerous books. Now we come to the end of the 19th century and the era of Sienkiewicz. This was an incredible success on all the fronts in all the countries. Between 1890 and 1900, there are about 45 titles. Suddenly there was a Polish literature by an unknown writer, translated into English, and it became a bestseller, and numbers of publications in France, in England, in Russia, in Poland, in the United States were incredible. And when I wrote to the publisher, Brown, Little Brown and Company, and asked about the sales. They said that this is they are not going to tell me the figures. I figured them out from a different way because I had his translator's contracts, which gave him 10%, and I knew how much money he was making. But this was an incredible source of income for the publishers and translators because there was no copyright. Sienkiewicz was a citizen of Russia. Russia didn't belong to the Berne Convention, which established the copyright for all the countries. So it was free game for the publishers and translators. So they are rushing, who is the first who will publish it? And they were making tremendous amounts of money in this. And Sienkiewicz, who later won Nobel Prize for Literature for his trilogy, Quo Vadis, which was his bestseller, and The Knights of the Cross, was the very popular author in the States. It's not only his books, but reviews, essays, and evaluations of his work. It was appearing in, just as at the time in the 19th century, in the newspapers, in installments. So people waiting for the next installment. In Poland, they were lining up. And when the hero was in danger, they would go to church and pray for his successful escape. Parents were naming their children by the names of the heroes. And he was recognized, as you can see here from numerous testimonials, as a leading author of the period and as also as a universal genius. What is less known is that his Quo Vadis, the story of Nero, of Rome during the times of Nero, was dramatized and set and put on stage. So there were numerous stage productions which were appearing in London and in New York and in Paris. And then they were, of course, filmed, recorded, and shown on TV. And film versions, especially from 1913, played in New York and London, and there were touring companies traveling all over the States and Canada showing the film and, of course, making tremendous amounts of money. So the tickets were $2.50, which at that time was an incredible high figure. And it was a great success. And then, of course, it was turned into the super colossal Hollywood version of 1951, which people of older generation in this country still remember. They might not know about Sienkiewicz, but they remember all Quo Vadis and the Hollywood version. And it was a great commercial success. So that's the period where Sienkiewicz was recognized and rewarded with his prize. What is more interesting is that even now, in 1991, there was a new version, which was not even a translation, but a reworked version of Quo Vadis, a trilogy, were translated again and found many readers. So the period of Sienkiewicz was very important, and that was due to his translator Jeremiah Curtin. Here we are. We'll go back again to Madison, because Jeremiah Curtin of Greenfield, Wisconsin, was educated at Harvard. He was a farmer's son, employed in the U.S. consulate in St. Petersburg. He learned Russian and worked there under Ambassador Clay for a while. Then he was released or let go. But he continued traveling through Russia and looking for topics for translation, and he stumbled into Sienkiewicz. And he came to Madison on January 18, 1872, with a delegation of the Grand Duke Alexei, who came to Milwaukee, and he came to Madison with one of the correction officers, Soldatikov, I think was his name, and he came here and he met Alma Cardell. Alma Cardell worked in a school, she was a school teacher, and they got married, and for the next 34 years she transcribed all of his books and translations, published, quote, his manuscripts. That was from her diaries that she produced the life of Jeremiah Curtin. and it was published in Madison in 1940. Curtin was very acute and sharp, and he knew that if he gets to Sienkiewicz first, he'll have the text. So he followed Sienkiewicz all over Europe, and it was the first to get these texts. He translated them, she transcribed them, sent it to Little Brown Company in Boston. The book were published, and Curtin received 10% of the sales, which was a considerable amount of money. He was, however, because he also translated Proust, Orzeszkowa to Polish important writers, the first American who programmatically rendered Polish literature into English. So he was the first par excellence translator. We got to the end of the 19th century, and we are coming now to 1901, 1945. And you know that there are about 60 books translated, or 70 books. Origins of Polonistica in this country was fueled by mass immigration into the United States from 1864, which was the January uprising, to 1924. 1924 is the date when the American government established a quota. Up to that time, everybody could come and was welcome, but then there was a little, there were some limitations. Also, after 1920, Poland was free, so there was not so much immigration. And you can see here how these parish schools of Polish immigrants were established, and how they grew up to the period of 1848, when there are about 560 schools and 320,000 students under 80, and then they gradually decreased. However, they were also very helpful in establishing academic studies of Slavic languages, literatures, and history, which began at the end of the 19th century. And the first professor of Slavic languages was Leo Wiener, born in Białystok, who studied medicine in Warsaw and engineering in Berlin. And he was hired to teach Slavic languages at Harvard University. And he was appointed a professor of Slavonic languages and literatures. Should be mentioned here. And he worked there for quite a long period of time, prepared and taught a lot of students. His son was one of the founders of cybernetics, Norbert Wiener. So his name is not unknown. And one of Wiener's students, George Noyes, went to St. Petersburg to study Russian for 2 years, to learn Russian. And in 1900, he was appointed assistant professor of English at UW Madison. So you might have started the Polish program not in 1935, but in 1900. But in 1901, he moved to Berkeley as instructor in English and Russian, where he launched a program of Slavic studies and teaching Russian and Polish language and literature until 1943. So he was an engine and organizer and a promoter of Slavic studies. And together with his students and collaborators, he translated Mickiewicz, Kochanowski, and Słowacki. You can see that now, after Sienkiewicz, it was a kind of an accident that Curtin was interested and followed and translated him. Now Mickiewicz, Kochanowski, and Słowacki, leading poets of the Renaissance and Romanticism, were translated. And Noyes had a group of about 15 people working with him. He was very skillful in involving students and publishing these works. And in 1905, the University of Chicago and Columbia offered Polish. In 1909, Notre Dame. So gradually, the courses in Polish were introduced. And in 1925, Arthur P. Coleman, the first American of non-Slavic origin, was awarded a PhD in Slavic languages at Columbia. That's the first one. It was in Russian. But he and his wife, Marion Coleman, devoted themselves to translating Polish literature. And they did a tremendous amount of work in this field, and enriched the scope of translations especially of Mickiewicz and other Romantic poets. And there are also courses in other schools. And then, as I mentioned at the beginning, University of Wisconsin, both in Madison and in Milwaukee, introduced Polish courses. So from this period, from 1901 to 1945, you can see that there are already 124 books and 13 anthologies. And still the leader is Henryk Sienkiewicz, followed by a second Nobel Prize winner for literature, for this one, Raymond. And then the Renaissance poets, Romantic poets, and from all periods, because with the growing Slavic programs from 1897 in Harvard to 1939, till the time of the war, or including the war period, there are numerous Slavic departments, there are Slavic scholars who are dedicated to writing and translating Polish literature. And here you have the list of some names who were translated in that period. Now we come to 1950 to 2010. And you can see here that this is 76% of all the translations. And the answer is the post-war growth of Slavic studies, particularly Russian, in the United States. Now the strong departments and numerous faculty in Polish studies. What happened is that during the war, many Polish scholars arrived in the United States and stayed after that. So there is poets, prose writers, and playwrights. 53 of them came to the United States, and many of them, like Czesław Miłosz later and others, stayed and worked at American universities. Then there are professors and instructors. So in this period, from 1950 to 2010, there are 327 Polish scholars working in the field. There are visiting scholars, those who come from Poland for a semester or a year and work here. And there are translators, and there are 317 of them in the United States. This is from the United States and Canada only. What is more, there are new institutions in New York, the Polish Institute of Arts and Sciences, the Kościuszko Foundation, the new associations, Slavic associations, which are very active, periodicals. And in Poland, the popularity of our knowledge of Poland grows because of John Paul II, of Solidarność, of two Nobel Prizes for Literature, and finally Free Poland from 1990. So there is a gradual growth of programs and students in Polish. And the last time I checked on this, it was 106 centers in this country where Polish was being taught. Not maybe on the scale of a full program, but the Polish language and literature were taught in Poland, in the United States and Canada. Now about translations. I divided these translations into two categories. From 1950 to 2010, because it's a big number. And it's connected, first of all, those writers who were not alive in 1945, and contemporary authors who wrote mainly after 1945. So from the old poets and writers, we have 122 books, and Mickiewicz is a leading author translated, and then Norwid. Two new names come into the fore, Witkacy and Schulz. And then Słowacki, Sienkiewicz still visible, and Kochanowski, Kopernik, Prus, Korczak, Wyspiański, and other authors of the pre-war period. Those who were still active after the war, you can see here that that's the biggest number, 287 of them, and led by Czesław Miłosz and then Różewicz. Lem, who is very popular in the science fiction field, Herbert Mrożek, and then Gombrowicz, Szymborska, Zagajewski, John Paul II, Brandis Kapuściński, and others. So this is the period where of authors who were. And here is the total summary of all from 1560 to 2010. Total 180 Polish authors, including 30 women, found translators and publishers, and the final ranking for all the writers through all the periods is Sienkiewicz and the second Mickiewicz. And this reflects the popularity in Poland. They are still the most important prose writers and poets, although it changes. But then comes Czesław Miłosz, Różewicz, Lem, Herbert, Norwid and Słowacki, great romantic poets, Mrożek, Gombrowicz and Witkacy, then Prus, Raymond, Schultz, Szymborska, Kochanowski, Kosak, Zofia Kosak-Szczucka, Zagajewski, Orzeszkowa, and John Paul II with 8. So this is the total figure for the translators. Now, all of this is possible, and here we come to translators, because there are 317 people, American and Canadian only. I listed all the books translated in England and Poland, but translators are only listed in this country. And I postulated that Hermes should be the patron saint of translators. It's not clear Saint Jerome is a good candidate because of his translations, but the, as you can see here, the mythical Hermes was a herald and messenger. He was an ambassador. He carried messages from country to country. He was also venerated as a protector of travelers, thieves, a facilitator of border crossings. He was always there, and he was also a patron saint of music and art, poetry. And as a mediator between cultures, I postulate that Hermes is a fitting patron of those who try to carry the message from one country to another against the linguistic borders. And more practically, you have to be Mercury. You have to be Hermes, Mercury, not only to deliver a new text, but also find instrument, find publishers for the books. Not an easy task even for the disciples of God with magical skills. The translation is one task, but as I'll mention in a moment, the second is finding publishers. And here are the leading translators who contributed to that task of conveying Polish literature into the English language. I already mentioned Jeremiah Curtin, George Noyes and his group, and Marion and Arthur Coleman. These three are very important, three groups, you might say. Other distinguished names include David Welsh, Harold Siegel and Daniel Giroud. And a separate recognition is due to Czesław Miłosz, who was not able to translate his own poetry, but he created a team of translators and co-authored 24 volumes of poetry, 13 with his own poems. And he inspired and attracted important poets. These Robert Haas and Robert Pinsky were poet laureates of the United States. Louis Irebarn, Madeleine Levine, Richard Lurie, Leonard Nathan, Lillian Vallée, and others who in turn produced many other translations. And then there is a team of John and Bogdana Carpenter, Claire Cavanaugh of at times at Madison, and Stanisław Barańczak and Bill Johnston. These are the people who contributed way to this task, and thanks to them, many Polish books found room in North American libraries, bookstores, and universities. And if we add all the translators working outside of the United States and Canada, that would mean in Poland, in England, in Australia, in other countries, we will be aware why it was possible to convey all this into the English language. I quote here the UNESCO data from 2000-2009. Nearly 80% of translations from English to Arabic, Chinese, French, German, Hindi, and Swedish. Only 9% into English. So you can see that it's important for an author to begin with to be published in English, if he wants to or she wants to gain international reputation. But it's difficult given the scarcity of translations into English, because there's only this small amount, and there's a huge American market for books. So the competition is very difficult to find a publisher and to sell the book, which is connected. So it's now these big numbers, which I showed you from 1950 to 2010, are supported by the professional translators, scholars, people who are supported by translation theory and methodology. And there is also in the Free Poland some support for translators, because they try to facilitate the passage of texts into the United States and England. And there is a national canon, or attempts to establish a national canon, and anybody who is preparing an anthology has to make a selection and suggest a canon. There's also institutional support for translators, for example, Instytut Książki, and there are some publishing houses promoting translation, for example, Wydawnictwo Literackie w Krakowie. Now the conclusions and summaries. Majority of translations have been published between 1950 and 2010. So in the and most frequently now these are contemporary writers. One can postulate that the general picture of Polish post-war literature is on the whole satisfactory, because there are current translations, and they are relatively fast to be found on the English market. The situation is not so clear when we review the earlier literature in translation, particularly from the medieval and Renaissance period, and that's for Professor Filipowicz and her students who are doing that period, waiting to be rendered into English are chronicles by Gallus Anonymus, Kadłubek, and others, religious poetry. Still lacking are adequate translations from the period of the Renaissance, which was very important, as I mentioned, and gave examples of Cromer and Goszlicki, because it was a period when Poland was the largest country in Europe, when it was in the mainstream of Western civilization, and when the essence of the Renaissance Republic was discussed. So Modrzewski, Górnicki, also Kochanowski, and in Baroque you can also mention a number of names and add to the total number. And in Romanticism, more attention should be paid to Słowacki, and in the 20th century to Konopnicka, Wyspiański, Kasprowicz. And it might be also good to look at new renditions or translations of Kraszewski, Orzeszkowa, Raymond, as well to many favorite authors of individual translators. So my conclusion is that there is a fair representation of Polish literature and culture as presented in the English language, but there is a lot of work to be done by a new generation of scholars to bring Polish literature into English, and that is concerned mostly with current literature, but also going back and finding individual authors who are worthy of translation and which contribute to the general view of Polish culture through the centuries. One has to remember that Polish medieval period covers 500 years, which means half of Poland's history. These are the beginnings, but they are essential beginnings, they are seminal beginnings, and the same is true about the Renaissance period. So that's the summary and a conclusion and a call for new translators to step up and work on the text. And I recommend Felińska and Sadyk Pasza Czajkowski as a beginning. Thank you.